New York Met star and mezzo-soprano Tara Erocht is back in Ireland to sing the title role in the Irish National Opera's new production of Rossini's Cinderella or La Cenerentola. Tara is with me now to tell me more. Angelina, she is in Rossini's world, or I suppose the librettist's world. Is she the same Cinderella that we know from the fairy tale, or is she a very different Cinderella?
No, she's the same. I mean, I think it's a story that transcends, you know. But the one thing I like about how Rossini has characterised her, she's not just a kind of wilting, let's say, wallflower. She has a little bit of fight left in her. And at every opportunity, she certainly tries to stand up for herself. Doesn't work, but she'll give it a go. But she's the exact same as all the fairy stories we've heard.
Yeah, but the music then that Rossini gives her to sing, is that what gives her that little bit of extra bite? Because Rossini wouldn't be giving you nice little long melodic lines.
A thousand notes a second, as much as possible. He's written it very, very well. So at the start, she appears and she sings this, what we believe is a nursery rhyme, probably something her mother sang to her. Now, the difference between the Rossini Cenerentola and the Cinderella we know, let's say, from Disney, is that here it's her mother who has passed away and there's a stepfather. And instead of a fairy godmother, there's a kind of fairy godfather in Alidoro.
And Rossini did this?
Yes, yeah. Because in France, it was also the tradition that when they told the story of Cinderella, there was no shoe, there was no glass slipper. It was that she had two very ornate bracelets and she gave one of them to the prince and said, if you want to find me with this, you can find me. But there was no shoe. So there was a difference also in the kind of, let's say, in the continental Cinderella tradition.
Were they very woke then back in the day, it would seem?
It was certainly, I mean, it's obviously from a true folklore in there somewhere. And Rossini took that and ran with it. So he has three very strong women. He has the two sisters and he has Angelina or Cenerentola, Cinderella, and for him that was more than enough strong women in one piece.
And does he refer to the sisters as ugly sisters?
No,
he
doesn't.
That's great. What does he refer to them as?
I have to say, he never says that. Even in the last critical edition from Maestro Zedda, where he's written the angry sisters, but they're never ugly.
Mm.
But, you know, as most of us would look at it, that in this day and age, I suppose, jealousy or hate, spite, any of those things, they are ugly in themselves. And I think probably even with the Disney approach, that's also where the ugliness would have come from rather than an appearance, let's say.
Yeah, so is appearance a little bit more in the background, would you say, in terms of, you know?
Sure.
So Cinderella as the blonde, perfect, little, lithe, that's all gone out the window, is it?
It's not to the fore. That's what I would agree with that. It's absolutely that the whole moral of the story, and as she says in this nursery rhyme that she sings, that probably her mother sang to her when she comes in for the first time, she says, l'innocenza, or innocence and goodness, will always be seen, will always, in the end, come to fruition, let's say.
Does that make it, you know, in these post-Me Too days, does that make it easier to perform that you've an opera that it sounds as if, even in Rossini's imagining of it, he was looking more at the quality of the person rather than the appearance of the person?
He definitely was. I mean, Rossini has done that in many of his pieces. It's also in The Barber of Seville, in his Otello, for example, Donna del Lago. And he usually always has one character that by the end people say, well, we knew from the beginning that their soul
was
good.
Yeah.
And they came round, or that blossomed, you know. Mm. And I think that that's one of his big strengths. And he writes a massive amount of coloratura. So a lot of notes in as short a space of time as possible.
Really ornamentative type of singing.
As much as possible. And his own notes to the singers that were going to debut the pieces were, I'll write it the first time, and when it's repeated, I expect you to ornament it to the best of your ability with your vocal ability or agility, whatever that might be.
And is that still happening in a contemporary situation? You know,
absolutely.
Do they refer to him as da capo arias from the beginning, or am I thinking of something different?
That's a little bit more with the Baroque. So Rossini has written in the repeated sentences that he wants, and he may change something slightly in the orchestration, but not in the vocal line, and he leaves it there for the singer.
So it's up to the singer. Do what you want.
Yeah.
That's an amazing freedom.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
I often think of the operatic world as, you know, quite tied down in terms of what's expected from you.
Sure.
You know, this whole, the balance between appearance and vocal ability, always a source of great pain and debate and annoyance for people, I think. He seems to have gone well beyond that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's expected. You know, for example, so with these shows in Dublin, I'll sing my 30th performance of the role. Now, there are people who've heard me sing that, you know, well, I won't say how many years ago, but let's say some years ago. And if they come to hear me sing it again, they should rightly also expect new ornaments, which I have. Because every time the voice changes, or I find something new in the character, or sometimes it can be, you know, ironing, and I think, oh my goodness, I just had an idea of a new ornament. You know, so you're always adding another layer. And that's why it's so brilliant to keep doing these Rossini roles. You know, because you can always bring something new to it. Or it could be that, let's say, for example, in one of the duets, the tenor will sing something and give you a little idea. And then together, you'll come up with cadenzas and ornaments that suit the two of you. So it's really, it's kind of always a little new, you know.
That's which must admit the fact that you have played this part in different situations. And in fact, you're playing it now with Irish National Opera, but you're going to play it in the New York Met next year at
that's
some
yeah,
point
in February.
Mm-hmm. And you had done it in Wales. How recently was that?
That was only about 9 months ago. I did it in Wales. I've done it at the Bavarian State Opera and the Vienna State Opera in Hamburg. All different productions, but the same music, always with a different conductor and different colleagues. So, you know, it's like a blank sheet then when you go into a new cast, and you kind of listen to the colleagues in the first musical rehearsal and see what directions they're going in and how you're going to meld that all together. And then, yeah, depending on your form or kind of the mood, you also just come up with new cadenzas.
Well, where are we in the Irish National Opera, the upcoming production? What kind of setting are we in? Are we in a contemporary setting? Are we in a fairy tale setting?
It's absolutely fairy tale. I have to say, when we all sat together on the first day, and Orpha Phelan,
who's
director,
yeah.
She made a presentation, and where they had a smaller scale version of the set and everything. I mean, I was absolutely spellbound, because in all of the other productions I've been, there's certainly not been anything as fairy tale as this. It's absolutely magical. And I can tell you, even after just a few weeks rehearsals, it's going to be something incredibly special. And I would say to anybody who's never been to an opera, this is the one to go and see. It's very understandable. The music is absolutely brilliant. Although a kind of heavy story for some people, because there's some sadness in there, it's really so cleverly written. There are very funny moments. Obviously a happy ending for everybody. Very family friendly also.
Yeah, there are young children.
Oh, there are.
Part of the chorus, you were
saying. Oh, and they're just incredible. I mean, I'll try not to give too much away. But they easily outshine all of the professional singers there with their acting abilities, and my goodness, they're so professional. Even when they come into the room and they're all so quiet, and the poor stage manager's kill trying to keep us from chatting. But they're
so the adults
absolutely
are the
brilliant.
Noisy ones.
Oh, without a question.
And the misbehaving
oh,
ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And are you to the fore of that, Miss?
Oh,
Wright?
No, terribly quiet. And,
yeah.
You know.
So you've changed personality since I last spoke with you.
Absolutely.
You know, I, the reason I ask you about how it's been realised for this production, I'm wondering, you know, in previous productions when you've maybe a very different dramatic take on the character, but yet the same music to sing, and here you are now with this fairy tale type take on the character and the story, but the same music
yes.
to sing. What's that balance like?
Well, you have to go in on the first day and just try and stay as open as possible to the director and their ideas. And sometimes it takes a couple of days then for you to think about it. I can use the example that the production I do in Hamburg at the State Opera is all set kind of in space. And there are robots and roller skates and you know, at the end, she goes off in a rocket with the prince, and it's all very different. And that took me a few days to kind of wrap my head around. But you're immersed in that. When you do a 3 or 4 week rehearsal period, you're immersed in all of those ideas. And so you just have to commit.
You,
I mean, that's part
that.
Of the job. You commit. And generally, the directors are more than happy to spend some time also speaking with you if you need to do that, or you'd like to talk about some ideas, or let's say the backstory or something. Yeah. I've also been in other productions. Like the one in Wales that I had also just done in Washington, where at the end, very sadly, it's all a dream. I mean,
oh, she wakes up.
My heart wasn't the best. It's still not the better for us.
She's still in the cinders.
It was her. Yeah, it was really sad, but I committed to it, and we did it. And it was very special, and very different. Not at all something I had expected. But those are part of the. That's just part of the job, and that also keeps it very interesting, because you know. It's not like you tour with one production all the time. Even though I sing the role a lot, each production is different.
And I guess the colour of the music then must the tone of the music must change with the dramatic tension, whatever way it's been realised.
And again, also the ornaments would change, you know. So what I would add to it changes because maybe my mood is different.
Yeah.
Or the mood in the room is different, you know. So that's one of Rossini's really special things, that he's written it in a way that you can be as open as possible.
When did you first go to the New York Met?
September 12 months ago, the 26th of September, my mother's birthday.
Wow, what a birthday present for her to worry all day about
exactly.
You at the New York Met audition. Yeah, maybe not a birthday present.
Yeah, no, the debut was 2 seasons ago. I did Niklaus. I played Niklaus in Le Conte Hoffmann. And then the same season, just a little bit later, I played Hansel in Hansel and Gretel.
But do you remember that first day, you know, walking into the Met and what?
I
can't imagine, you know, obviously you had an established career, you had been well critiqued, you know, all of that had happened.
Yeah.
How overpowering is that? How hard is it to get, you know, hold on a minute, got to focus here, I've got an audition to do.
Well, the audition, what was interesting there, I mean, that's, well, it was 5 years before the debut, so yeah. I was really still very young. And I had flown in and they had insisted, you know, you fly the day before, so you're over the jet lag and everything. The building itself is gigantic. And it's this huge thing just in the middle of the city. Took me nearly an hour to find the stage door, which in itself was a laugh. But like everything else, from my first singing lesson with Geraldine McGee in Dundalk, she had always said to me, you just say 3 Hail Marys before you go in and you'll be grand.
And does it work?
It absolutely worked, because it was all I could think to do. I had nothing else. When I walked in, the house lights were up. Generally, when you would do a stage audition, the house lights are down, so you can't see anything, and you also don't know who's in the auditorium. But the house lights were up in this gigantic football stadium-sized place, and I could just see 4 little faces, like, right at the back of the auditorium, which were the panel.
Of course they'd go to the back. You know, fear of them sitting halfway up to say, look, you don't have to go full belt on this.
Yeah. Absolutely. When I think of it now, I mean, incredible. And they said, you know, they knew exactly what they wanted to hear. They wanted to hear Cenerentola and they wanted to hear Rosina from the Barber of Seville, only the second half. So I did both of them. And they then said to me, now, if you'd like for yourself as an experiment to sing as quietly as you possibly can, Cherubino from Le Nozze di Figaro, which I did, and to hear that bounce off the walls and actually come back to you in the theatre,
even at a very quiet level,
really nearly with nothing, just a little one little notch above marking, then I knew, okay, now this is only with piano, of course, but I thought oh, it'll be fine, because in my head I thought, well, I'm far too young and they won't offer me anything and whatever. After the audition, had lunch with my manager, headed back to the airport, and as I was checking in for the flight, he called me and said, yeah, we have it.
Wow.
Sorted.
And obviously that was, you know, they'd be so far ahead that
it was
going
for 4
to be
years ahead,
4
yeah.
or 5 years afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've known also about the Cenerentola for years. And then obviously you're not allowed to tell people, you know, until they announce the season, which is only with about 12 months notice. So, yeah.
And is this a new production of Cinderella that will be happening in the Met? Or is it
it's a new production for me. Rep. I haven't done it before.
And it has been in rep with
it
them.
Has. And because I'm kind of on the Rossini circuit quite a time now, I know everybody in the cast. We've sung it all together before. The tenor is Javier Camarena. I've done most of my Cenerentola with him. So there's also a lovely comfort in that, you know.
Well, we better talk about who the tenor singing beside you.
A great story
as well.
About the tenor here. Andrew Owens is his name. Andrew and I were in the opera studio together in Munich also a few years ago, but we won't speak about that. And
before the New York audition?
It was.
Yeah. Okay,
I'll give you that much.
We've a rough guide as to when it was then. Okay.
But in that period, we also sang one or two Rossini pieces together, but never whole operas. And then Andrew, much earlier than I did, left and was freelance, and he was back in the States, and he's developed also a huge Rossini career. And I've been trying for years to find something for us together. Mm. Dates never worked. And I was lucky enough in this circumstance that I was also allowed to suggest some people, or I was just delighted that that could work, because Andrew also, American, huge, huge Irish ancestry, Irish passport. He's so proud to be here. It's incredible, picking up Irish dialogue, let's say, all the time. He's really wonderful, and I think the audience are going to be so impressed with what he can do. It's really stylistic and beautiful. Mm. And the man can sing. My right. goodness, can he sing.
Well, we're going to get you to, well, not sing right now, but for this upcoming production. This is a big aria, so we'll listen to part of it. Non più mesta. This is towards the end of the opera, is it?
You know? Right at the end.
And she's kind of... How disheartened is she by this? Because the idea here is goodness will always win through.
Exactly.
But initially, it doesn't seem as if that's the case, does it?
No, it doesn't. But just before this aria, so there's the big sextet, the prince has come in, he's told her who he is, she's a bit kind of shocked and she's not sure.
Has he given back the bracelet?
He presents the bracelet.
Okay. He's honest.
Exactly. He gives her the bracelet and she says to Dandini, oh my goodness, is this true? I mean, does he really mean this? And I'll do even though I'm a servant or I'm not noble. Dandini says, no, absolutely, he means it. And the last thing she says to the prince before they get married is, my punishment for this family and for how they've treated me is forgiveness. And I ask you to also forgive them. And that's her last big kind of very vulnerable thing in the whole show. And he very quietly agrees. He just says, okay. Whether he wants to or not, we'll never know. But he just says, okay. And she stands back, and this whole aria is the pure relief. She says first how, you know, she spent years crying and nobody cared for her. She was really by herself. And then out of nowhere, this lightning bolt came and changed everything. The lightning bolt being that goodness will win through, that the tenor came, that Alidoro cared for her, all of these things. And it builds up into an absolute coloratura firework fest, is all I can call it.
Towards the end.
Indeed.
Well, let's listen out anyway. Non più mesta, final aria from La Cenerentola, Rossini's Cinderella, sung by Tara Erocht.
Non più me sta accanto a tuo starò so la gorgheggia no a sul lampo solo un gioco il mio lungo staccando il fuoco starò sola a gorgheggiar no a frullam un sogno un gioco il mio lungo un sogno gioco
Well, they might cheer Tara Aroch there performing the thousands of notes per second that she mentions that Rossini asks the singer to do, and the aria Più Mesta from Rossini's Cinderella La Cenerentola, and that was with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra in a performance from 2015. The upcoming Irish National Opera production of La Cenerentola, Cinderella, runs at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre from November the 10th through until the 16th, and you can find out full information on irishnationalopera.ie.